Welcome to the Week in IndyCar News. I am Marshall Pruitt, and we're going to do something new this week. I'm flying solo on my own podcast, which sounds a bit weird, but at least with our Week in IndyCar News, I've always had my partner in crime, Robin Miller, and we have chopped up whatever's happened over the past week. Last week, you might have noticed that we skipped a recording because Robin has been extremely under the weather and hoping that he would be feeling better. Spoke with him just a little while ago, and we both decided it would be better for him to continue resting and hopefully getting back to full strength sometime in the near future. And would certainly better, rather than having him drain what little energy he has yapping about IndyCars with me, I'm just going to do my own podcast solo. So off we go. Going back to what we missed last week, Tony Kanaan was the big announcement at AJ Foyt Racing. But before we get to that, since we're going to try and put this up here Wednesday afternoon, the big news coming this week is IndyCar, Mark Miles, and IndyCar driver Graham Rahal, everything we know, are hopping on a plane out to Portland to announce the 2018 schedule here on Thursday. For the intel that Robin and I have, Portland will be replacing the Watkins Glen date on Labor Day. We do not believe Watkins Glen will be on the 2018 calendar, which is a shame, because that event is just, it is vehicular insanity watching IndyCars lap that circuit with the speed and just everything that they have. Would we love to see Watkins Glen back? Of course. If there was some sort of permanent guarantee that we are going to be going there every year, I would love to hear it. But at least for now, commercially, I think between the bad weather this year, that certainly, I think, limited crowd turnout, plus the good but not great response to the return last year in 2016 from a crowd size standpoint, I just don't think the economics lived up to something that would make sense. If you're going to keep going to a place, even if the racing is good, even if the teams love it, and however many fans love it, if you're a series like IndyCar, there's one thing I would say that's almost more important than anything else, even the quality of racing, how much people love the venue, it's you can't look weak. You cannot look up into the grandstands during a televised event on NBCSN, ABC, ESPN, you name it. You really cannot be a series that is trying to rebuild, that is promoting a slight uptick in TV ratings and doing everything it can to show the world that it still matters, that it is healthy, that it's getting stronger. And then you go to this place that everybody loves and you see that, well, if everybody loves this place, where are all the fans? So, I know it's a bit of an obvious statement to make, but IndyCar cannot afford to go to places where it looks weak or unimportant, or, again, where you'd say, wow, you don't even have to convince folks to show up because this is such an amazing show. That's what we have at Watkins Glen, and folks weren't turning up. So, as someone who has loved Portland for most of his life, I don't know how many times I've driven there. It's about 12 hours from where I was born and raised here in the Bay Area. I've driven there a dozen times, 20 times, I don't know how many, but having been there for countless IndyCar events, IMSA events, American Le Mans Series, club racing with the SCCA, that's a beautiful place. That is a lovely place. Same question, though. It's been a long time, like Watkins Glen, since IndyCar raced there. Are there still lots of fans waiting for it? Is there a lot of love waiting once IndyCar returns, and will the place be overflowing with people who never wanted it to leave? Or will we find that there's almost been a generational break where those who went now a little bit older maybe don't care as much, maybe stopped following, and have we made enough new young fans in the Pacific Northwest to want to turn up and see open wheel racing there? So, big question. We also had our friend Elio Castro Neves confirm something that we've been telling you since Mid-Ohio 2016 was going to happen, and that's him moving over to Roger Penske's Acura sports car program. So he's going to be in IMSA, and if I'm trying to link the two together, we're looking at Portland as a place to promote. We no longer have Juan Montoya, huge draw. We no longer have Elio Castroneves' huge draw. IndyCar is going to have a bit of a challenge. I mean, we love Joseph Newgarden. That kid's everything that is right about American open wheel racing. He's just not a household name, not even close. So it is going to come down to a Graham Rahal, a little bit better known. A James Hinchcliffe, a little bit better known. A Tony Kanaan, definitely, I would say, the clear, most popular, most well-known IndyCar driver. One, I think, just about the only, with a link back to the old Portland event, maybe Scott Dixon. There aren't many, but I'm hoping that there are enough kind of older, familiar names that might draw some folks out, plus some of the younger talent, the Alexander Rossis and so on, that will at least give Portland a better chance to continue for a couple years, but definitely all about crowd size. And I have been there when it has looked empty, much like Watkins Glen, much like some other events. It's depressing. So, again, crossing fingers, crossing every body part possible, that not only will Portland become an awesome event, but it'll have the kind of subscription from fans to keep it on the calendar for many years to come. Let's move over to AJ Foyt Racing. So Tony Kanaan going there, not a surprise. Our friend Mr. Miller, last month, I don't know, a week, month ago maybe, 3, 4, 5 weeks ago, wrote a story saying that Tony Kanaan was going to be heading to Foyt's on a 2-year deal, so the confirmation of that hopefully wasn't a surprise. The thing that I think is most interesting about this, and we'll see how it plays out, Tony going there is a great thing, no question, fantastic. I actually think the biggest impact, the most valuable addition there, is going to be Eric Cowden, his engineer, who's coming over from Chip Ganassi Racing. And if you have Carlos Munoz and Connor Daly, and they are routinely struggling, this is a team, by the way, that by the numbers, 2017, was the bottom performer of every team in IndyCar. So we're not picking on them, we're just saying, look, the numbers don't lie. That no other team got less out of their cars, out of their drivers, out of their potential than Foyt. Obviously coming back for a second year with the Chevy engine will help. Essentially starting from scratch with a new aero kit, that is certainly going to help level the playing field. But I think the biggest area, I really do believe, the biggest impact and possible uptick in performance is going to be Cowden. And this is someone who's worked with Tony since he arrived in America. This is someone who's engineered him to an Indy 500 win, has engineered every iteration of the DeLardi W12, for example, when it came stock with aero kits, Chevy, Honda, you name it. I really think as the new technical director, Eric is going to be someone that can shape that program's success and move them towards success faster than probably anybody else that's available in the paddock right now. In his place, replacing their former technical director, Will Phillips, who was IndyCar's, I guess you could call him engineering and competition guru for many years. Yeah, we'll be honest. Will's pretty cool guy. I've always enjoyed him, always thought highly of him. I'm one of many who hoped for the best when he was announced as Foyt's new technical director to start 2017. And I'm probably also one of many who said, it's been a long time since Dear Will was a straight-up race engineer. He's been many other things, but as a race engineer, technical director, it had been many generations of IndyCar chassis had gone by since this was something that he did. I don't know what was expected from him, that he would somehow get magically up to speed and be at a place where he is competitive against the Ben Bretzmans at Penske, heck, his brother Eric Bretzman at Andretti, and Chris Simmons at Ganassi. Had Will been brought in a development role, someone overlooking maybe R&D projects, some wind tunnel stuff, I could see that being a better fit and having more immediate results. Why they chose somebody who hadn't been in this role for 10 plus years in a highly competitive series like IndyCar, with some sort of belief that he would be able to magically compete against everyone else, didn't happen. So what we thought would happen did happen with Cowden now in that role. Not sure what they're going to do with Connor Daly's engineer. He and Connor did actually build some pretty good rapport throughout the season, especially getting towards the end. They had some good runs. Don't know if Connor's going to be back. I don't know if he's going to have any fingernails left after chewing them constantly, waiting to see if our little nervous friend is waiting to see whether he will be invited back to the dance. I hope that he does get that invite, because I think with Cowden there and Cowden bringing just a higher state of competitiveness, especially from any and everything he might have picked up at Chip Ganassi Racing, you want to see that kid. I want to see that kid get another shot. You might say, what about Carlos Munoz? I'd love to see that kid too, don't get me wrong, but he's had a couple years with Andretti, was able to win a race. I don't want to say he got a perfect shot, but he's had enough years to show what he was capable of, was hired to be the leader at Andretti, and I don't know if he really distinguished himself in that role, especially over Connor, who had one full season coming in at Dale Coyne Racing. And this is a Dale Coyne prior to Craig Hampson showing up, prior to Olivier Boisson. So if I'm just looking at the two, saying who's had a shot, who really deserves a stronger shot, I would throw my money with Connor. And granted, anybody with half a brain, Foyt's included, would be saying, all right, who are we going to put in a car for the 500 for the month of May, for any of the big races maybe on the ovals? Well, Carlos is the obvious choice. So still waiting to find out what's going to happen there. Tony Kanaan, we know, with a two-year contract, is wanting to come in and go out in style, wanting to end his IndyCar career on his own terms. A question for you, dear listeners. Do you think he can win another race before his contract is up with Foyt? Knowing that he just spent, 3-4 years with Chip Ganassi and had one win, can he make that happen with the worst-performing team of the season and help turn them around enough, along with Cowden and anyone else they bring on board, to make them competitive enough to challenge Ganassi, Penske, Rahal, Andretti, and so on? I'm going to save my opinion on that. You might be able to pick out which direction I'm leaning, but I'd rather hear from you, so throw back any thoughts you might have on Facebook or Twitter. And let's move on to a couple of other items to kind of wrap up last week in terms of IndyCar, and a couple of other fun things that happened to witness last weekend at Petit Le Mans. So not only do we have Tony being confirmed and Cowden being confirmed, we had Roger Penske throw us a little bit of curveball, saying when asked, you know, hey, Montoya, so we know that he's going to be your sports car driver for the next couple years, but if a team wanted him to drive for them at the 500, would you let them? Roger was surprisingly accommodating. To the point that Juan wasn't completely sure that, you know, I'm not saying he doubted his boss, but there was a little bit of questioning on his end as to whether Roger would truly let him go drive for a Ganassi or an Andretti or someone that could beat Penske. When I saw Juan first thing Thursday morning at Road Atlanta for Petit Le Mans, said, hey, do you see what Roger said about you being able to drive? He hadn't, and almost didn't believe me when I told him. And so anyways, I like the fact that, you know, in theory, Roger would permit that to happen. And I know Juan wants to win another Indy 500. He takes great pride in the fact that he has raced there 5 times and won twice. He's not a guy with a giant ego. Ego meaning someone who walks around just in a very boastful and whatnot manner. He has the version, maybe it's the same thing and I'm kidding myself, but he is just a guy filled with self-confidence, and I do actually consider that to be different than having a raging ego. He knows that in a competitive car, there are very few people on the planet Earth that can match him or beat him, and I wouldn't argue with that at all. So knowing that, if you were provided with something competitive to go up against the captain, you can understand why Juan would be saying, I don't know if he'd actually really want me to do that, because if I could, I would beat him. And I said, well, how would that be, brother? If you, beat Roger, you're the guy who takes the baby Borg away from Newgarden and Elio and all the other drivers. And then you turn up the next week at Detroit for the IMSA race and walk back into the Penske hauler, rejoining the team, as a guy who just beat him at the Indy 500. And he just gave me a look like, yeah, that might be a little bit too much to ask. So going along with our friends at Penske, we obviously had Elio Castroneves confirmed with the thing. Like I said, we've been telling you since Mid-Ohio 2016 this was the plan. It's nice to see that finally confirmed. Never really doubted that it was going to be confirmed, but honestly, it did get a little bit tiring to keep writing expected, presumed, you know, likely to be, etc., etc. Great to see that confirmed for him. Caught up with Elio Thursday morning at Petite as well, just after I spoke with Mr. Monterior, and I have to admit, you can see what we thought and what we knew, that there's a bit of wistful longing for being able to, not being able to continue in IndyCar. We know that if he had the choice, if he could make the decision, we know he would be an open wheel for another 50 years if he could. At the same time, the side that I was very heartened to see, and I'm hoping if you caught any of Petit Le Mans or anything that we put up on racer.com during the event, this is a person who's feeling youth, feeling energy, and I think it was definitely realization of the new task at hand. Coming in, helping to build a new program for Roger, the Acura Team Penske effort, and to help lead that, because he is being asked to lead, to be one of the team leaders. He's going to have a young teammate in Ricky Taylor, who was just confirmed today. We've also been telling you for about 6 months that was going to happen. And it's just been cool to see Elio, I think, shift gears mentally. Not shift down, but just shift gears. And knowing that there's been pressure every year. It's an old, old soap opera reference, but he's been the Susan Lucci of IndyCar and championships. You know, how many years in a row? 19, 20 years of runner-ups. And this guy has been the most consistent IndyCar driver probably of all time. Just consistently not winning the championship and coming close. So it was just really nice to see, nice to talk with him. He was having some fun, having some laughs. That this, I think, for him, a little bit of a pressure release. Okay, now I need to go get a championship for Roger, obviously, in IMSA, in the prototype category. But it was just something nice to see. Whatever weight had been on his shoulders about this, clearly looked like it had been lifted. I think he's going to love working with Ricky Taylor. There could not be a better depiction of polar personality opposites than Ricky. Sweet kid, genuinely. If you don't know him, I hope you get to know him through whatever interviews or conversations or meeting him. He's just a lovely child, not an extrovert by any means. And then you have Elio, who is just turned up to 11 at all times. This is going to be funny. This is truly going to be funny. Because then in the other car, you've got Montoya, who is overflowing with character, but he's not the big, blah, you know, kind of loud, shouty, turn all cameras towards me type personality that Elio is. And he's teamed with Dane Cameron, who is similar to Ricky and not being that big, loud, loud voice. But I think he and Montoya are going to be a perfect match. It's going to be fun here to watch Elio goading Ricky to say more, talk more. I think that's just going to be a lot of unintentional comedy. But all that stuff aside, I've probably told you guys many, many times, or too many times. My first year in Indy Lights in 96 was Elio's first year, Tony's first year. Got to know those guys then. I've known them forever, loved them forever. And there's, you know, it's cool for me just on a personal, quick personal note to see this guy who have followed for so long, seen him achieve so many things, get to that transition point in his career. And it's not some B-grade or C-grade drive for somebody in IndyCar where it's only going to keep going downhill. It's him moving over to sports cars earlier than he wanted, but still driving for the captain, earning serious income and salary. And I would say that cool to see him move to a place where he is going to be a vital role in their success, compared to someone who maybe is hanging on and continuing to hang on over and over again to win a championship on his 21st, 22nd, 23rd try. So good for him. And I'm also going to just state right up front, please buy tickets to IndyCar races. Please go to as many as you can. Clearly, with everything I mentioned about Watkins Glen and Portland, we need as many fans as possible. But also, don't be afraid to buy tickets to IMSA races next year. Because as someone who is fortunate to be one of about two people that actually covers both series, this is going to be amazing. between the IndyCar stars coming in, some European talent that's coming in on the prototype level, the existing talent that's already there. 2018 is absolutely looking like it's going to be, I don't know if it's gold. This is silver, for sure. Silver era at minimum for North American road racing-based series like IndyCar, with the still the four or five ovals thrown in, plus IMSA as well, even World Challenge. Next year's looking pretty darn amazing, and just in terms of crossover, you know that you can go to the long IMSA races and see Simon Pagenaud, Graham Rahal, Ryan Hunter-Reay, who I believe is going to be announced as the endurance driver for Wayne Taylor Racing, Elio, obviously, Montoya, obviously, Sebastian Bourdais with Ganassi's Ford GT program, Scott Dixon in that, Townsend Bell, etc., Ryan Briscoe, someone who's moved over to IndyCar, or from IndyCar to IMSA. It's just stacked. And how cool is that? It's reminding me very much of that mid to late 2000s era where there was so much crossover between IndyCar teams, American Le Mans Series teams. We have that back. So just if you're a fan of racing, if you're primarily a fan of IndyCar, you really are being given a lot of opportunities to look at what IMSA is doing next year, and it's damn cool. All right, we're going to speed through a few more things quickly, and then, because we had thought we were going to record an episode of The Week in IndyCar last week, I asked for you, the listeners, to send in a bunch of questions that didn't get used. So because I'm an idiot, I've actually kept them, and I apologize that we weren't able to use them last week, but I still have many of them here, and I'm going to rattle through them. We lost Bill Puterbaugh, definitely not a big household name among IndyCar drivers, someone who made a bit of a statement, pretty cool statement, in the 1970s, the first ever Rookie of the Year at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Sad to see Bill go, obviously. Just sad that we seem to be losing enough drivers, whether it is NASCAR, whether it is IndyCar, sports cars, team owners, engine builders like Doug Yates. I mean, you get tired of writing obituaries, and it's not a complaint. It's just one of those things where you want to be able to celebrate the people that made this sport what it is, or continue to write new chapters. And it's just always sad when you are having to farewell somebody who was part of that narrative and just an important part of our world in general. Speaking of our world, everyone's favorite Catalonian, one Oriol Servia, been looking to get into sports cars for a while and has told me that he is not giving up on his dream of winning the Indy 500. I think you will see Elio in... I just said Elio. Thanks, Oriol. I'm being an idiot here, calling you Elio. I think we're going to see Oriol back in the Indy 500 again. Anybody with a quarter of a brain would put that boy in a car. Having started 12th this last May, seemingly passed everybody, had some problems that didn't allow him to get the finish that he wanted, but this is a guy who I'm hoping someone in the IMSA prototype world picks him up, because he's at that place where it's right. You know, doing one, two, three IndyCar races a year, it's good. You know, it helps bring some money in. Definitely an underuse of talent, though. So I appreciate the fact that he's recognized that now really is the time to try and make that full-time transition to IMSA if he can, but also while not giving up his goal and plans every May at Indianapolis. All right, going to take a sip of coffee here and try and get through as many questions as I can. Some of these are for our man Miller, so if I continue to have any semblance of mental faculties, I will try and save those for him, hopefully next week, if our man is back up to strength. Here's another thing. Please share your thoughts. So I'm more than happy to do this and just talk and ramble on each week, because, hell, it's kind of what I do most of the time anyways. But if Miller is still out, if he's still on the disabled list, I don't know. Who should I ring to have as my co-host, my special guest and co-host to join us here on The Week in IndyCar? Was thinking about calling my pal Bob Varsha, because he's awesome. Was also thinking of calling Lee Diffie, because he's awesome. But I don't know. I'd call Hinch. If you have ideas, let me know on Facebook or Twitter, and if Miller is not up to the task, then I will see if I can bring someone else in. If, listening to my monkey ass for a half hour is too much. All right, let's start ripping and rolling here with questions, starting with our friend Laszlo Fonegi, who asked, if Julian Palmer ends up in IndyCar, is a chance for a European round at Donington Park? No. 0% unless Julian's father, Jonathan, wants to pay lots and lots and lots of millions to make it happen. Mike Christoph asked, any further word on the schedule for 2018? Yes, Thursday, tomorrow, will be the day where it is all kinds of magic. Luke Edwards, what happened to fun, exciting victory lane and podium celebrations? It's usually very empty and awkward. And Mike Burrell, IndyCar spotter, added, it's so choreographed, no emotion. And Jason Burgess, fellow IndyCar spotter, not fellow as in me, but like Mike, exactly what Mike said, that goes to NASCAR too. Please sit in the car for 10 minutes while we get everything ready for you to be happy. Guys, I could not agree more. As someone who is often standing there in victory lane with a camera or video camera or something, waiting to film or shoot or ask questions, the, hey, the guy just pulled up in their car, and they sit there, and they sit there, and they're told to jump out and uncork the emotion that they had 2 minutes ago or 5 minutes ago or whatever it is. Look, this became a made-for-TV sport a long time ago, and so, Luke, I'm not, you know, not pushing back on you here. I'm just saying that, you know, this has become something where, whether it's NASCAR and they put some sort of big box on the roof with a sponsor name on it, or an IndyCar, it's, you know, the car's wheeled in front of the Verizon logo, the little Verizon viewing perch. You know, we sold this opportunity many, many years ago, so don't disagree that it'd be awesome if you just saw a driver jump out and say, F yeah, you know, went nuts. Hell, do donuts in Victory Circle. That would be awesome. I think if we agreed to put up the money to pay the fines for some of that, we might be able to get someone to do it. I bet Newgarden. Newgarden's someone who strikes me as someone who might just say, oops, sorry. Let's see, what else? Someone wants to know if Robin owns a suit or a tie. A suit like what you would think as in going in and getting fitted for a proper matching suit. I don't know. I know that he has a blazer. I know that he has a tie. I took a picture of him putting it on about 2 years ago at Indy, and it was just because I wanted to actually have visual evidence that it happens. He does have slacks, so I guess if you put all that together, you could call it a suit. Let's see, Paul Zimmerman, my dear friend Paul Zimmerman, who takes my money and sends me cool models and stuff from the Motorsport Collector in Chicago, and who will also be helping to auction off the 2017 Wilson Children's Fund IndyCar prints, asks, any whispers about Cleveland returning? Paul, I have not heard a whisper, a sneeze, a cough, or otherwise, and I will tell you readily that until we do start hearing those whispers, I will be sad, because I love that place, even when it was 1,000,000% humidity, and you were trying not to collapse from the heat. That track was amazing, the town's amazing, the people were amazing. That, to me, is another venue that I think could almost be recession-proof in terms of fans, because if it comes back as the party that it once was, I think folks, whether they're racing fans or not, would turn up to it, just like a lot of folks do at Long Beach or for the 12 Hours of Sebring, etc., etc. Donald Gowron asks, how big of an impact will the affect the series? Let me try and turn that into a functioning sentence. How big of an impact will it be to the series once Verizon departs after 2018, and thoughts or rumors as their possible replacement? I think that's something that I or myself or Robin threw in just as a throwaway thing at the beginning of the season at St. Pete, and I had thought that that was something that a lot of people knew about, as I kind of came to learn that wasn't. So that was probably me being stupid, and I should have written a proper story about it instead of it being a throwaway line. There are rumblings that Verizon could extend. I know that Mark Miles has gone on the record saying that some of those discussions are being had. You might have heard Robin and I talk about this a couple months ago. when this was signed with Verizon's former CEO, who was a big race fan, we had big promotions. And with the change of CEO, you can tell the amount of commercials that stopped airing, right? It seemed like you could not watch an IndyCar race, 2 years ago maybe, where every commercial break had something from Verizon to the point where you're like, come on, give me something else. This year, you're almost begging to see one. So you can definitely see the effect that the new CEO has inherited a series entitlement that wasn't their own, and they might not be fully behind. Again, I've heard whispers beyond what Mark Miles said, that there's still discussions going on for them to continue, that could be warming up a little bit more. So Donald, while I had heard that the end of 2018 would be the end of the Verizon title sponsorship, might need to sit on that for a little while, and hopefully that changes, because, you know, I can't think of anybody that would want IndyCar to lose a title sponsor other than their rivals, but hopefully that is not the case. Let's see, Sydney Yagle asks, what annual rumor always make y'all laugh or cringe? I have to admit, Sydney, there hasn't been a big annual rumor this year that has popped up, but the one that, you know, this might be the exception of is IMS being sold. Is the Holman George family going to sell the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and therefore the IndyCar series, which falls under their umbrella? Is that going to be sold to someone else? I haven't really heard that one this year. And if it has gone around and someone's written about it, then I must have missed it. But that one always makes me cringe. I mean, it's... yeah. I mean, IndyCar, I don't think, would survive without the Holman George family in charge and without their benevolence in keeping it going. So, haven't heard that one this year. You know, you hear the stuff about Danica since she has lost her ride in NASCAR. I don't have anything to say that I've heard that she is genuinely going to be driving for anyone, but I mean, that would be a great promotional thing for IndyCar and any team that were to employ Danica for the month of May. But I also think that despite her really impressing, truly impressing as a rookie and in her first, you know, her initial attempts at the Speedway, I think anybody who believes she could turn up and take on a much deeper field and have the same kind of impact would be sorely disappointed. And that's not just being negative against Danica. That's just saying that the Indy 500 has become truly, truly fierce. There are very few people competing in that race these days where you go, eh, a bit of a wanker, doesn't really belong. So I just would say that Danica, although she certainly excelled at the 500, I don't think she would turn up and find the same level of competitiveness truly within her reach as it once was. All right, we're going to speed through a couple more here. Ben Tyler asked, with Ricardo Juncos competing in the runoffs, who's the last IndyCar owner to compete at the runoffs? I don't have the exact answer, Ben. I know that Chip Ganassi, who wasn't an IndyCar team owner back then, but he's competed. Bobby Rahal's competed. Jimmy Vassar was the prep shop that I worked for, Pfeiffer Ridge Racing. I got there just after Jimmy won his 1986 Formula Ford National Championships at the runoffs. He obviously went on to co-own the KV Racing team. On an unfortunate related Vassar note, I know that he lost part of his V12 vineyard here in nearby Napa to the wildfires. Ken Murillo, I believe 1988 Super V, SCCA Super V champion, lost his house in the fire. Ricky Cameron, father to IMSA champion Dane Cameron, lost his house in the fire, the house that Dane grew up in. Been some tough times here, obviously, in Texas. Our friend, former IndyCar race director Bo Barfield, lost most of his house to the flooding there. Other friends in Florida with flooding and hurricanes. So, you know, it's a little bit of a sidebar here, but you talk about enough friends in the world of motor racing and ultimately you're going to strike upon someone who's had a genuinely crappy time here fairly recently. All right. Mike White asks, any new teams confirmed yet? confirmed, as in them saying, hey, world, we're doing it for sure. No. I would say we do try to keep you fairly well up to speed on things while they're developing, like Carlin, with them looking to field at least one entry from Max Chilton. We know that they have purchased at least one new Dallara DW12, which we wrote about recently. Know that they Trevor Carlin has spoken with, I believe, both engine manufacturers. I know he's spoken with at least one, because I happen to wave down the head of that company who was walking by, because the two of them needed to meet so they could get some business done. So I would say Carlin would be very surprised if they're not on a grid. You don't buy DW12s. You don't spend that kind of money if you aren't planning to go IndyCar racing. Ricardo Juncos would be very surprised if he does not have new Indy Lights champion Kyle Kaiser in a car next year. And yeah, I mean, there's a couple others who are working on things that, you know, again, we try and keep you fairly well up to date as to what's happening there. So nothing new and truly confirmed, but you should have a pretty good idea of who's coming in and who's doing what. Our friend Steve Shunk, the invaluable Steve Shunk, asks, if Robin and I were stuck on a desert island, which Unser would you both want to be with and why? I mean, here's the thing. Uncle Bobby would be amazing if we knew that a boat, a rescue boat, was coming within 48 hours. If we were stuck with Little Al, I'd say if we knew one was coming in about a week, that might, we could probably do there. If we knew we were going to be there for a really, really long time, I'd probably go with Johnny Unser. Good guy, resourceful, you know, let's just put it this way. With most of the other Unsers, barring Al, Big Al, there's a lot of gum flapping, Steve. With Johnny, I know that's a guy where if we had to, you know, try and do our best Tom Hanks impression and get off the island, he'd be the guy you'd want helping you build that canoe, build a raft out of something, make sure Wilson was inflated. So that's at least my call. We'll try and ask Miller next week if he actually, he might kill himself, to be honest, Steve. If you pose that to Robin, he'd probably say suicide would be the best option, even though you didn't put that one on the table. Nathan DeRover, the good Nathan who asks lots of great questions on a regular basis, asks, will the race in Mexico be on Hermanos Rodriguez Circuito, Rodriguez Brothers? That was the plan. That's the only thing I've heard spoken about. Also, we're not necessarily expecting that to be announced for 2018. So we will see whether that does end up as a TBA to be announced, or whether IndyCar is just going to say, eh, not enough time, going to move that over to 2019 as a possible event. But yeah, that was the Circuito there is the only one that I've heard that is serious. All right, Pat O'Day asks, what was the real / ultimate reason Elation was dumped by Schmidt Peterson? Well, we've kind of written about that, Pat. There are a couple of items here. One, we know that Mikhail came in this season with a smaller budget than ever. And when you are a skilled driver like Mikhail, but someone who is not contributing as much as you once were to purchase your ride, and the team is then having to rely on their own sponsors, whether it's Forest Lucas and Lucas Oil or others, to subsidize the rest of the car, honestly, the amount of excuses you are allowed to use are kind of directly related to how many excuses you've bought. Meaning, if you are forking out the full 5, 6, 7 million for a seat, you have more or less an endless line of excuses you can use, whether for why you're crashing, for why you did something dumb, you rode off a car, whatever it might be. If you're the guy bringing half the budget and you have used that up by running into things and making bad decisions, brother, you run out of excuses. And the team, honestly, if they're picking up half the tab or whatever exactly it was with Mikhail this year, it gives them the option to say, you're standing down, brother, whether it's for a race to get your head on straight or for the rest of the season. So do I think Mikhail showed us his best? Do I think he was living his best IndyCar life this year? Of course not. But keeping in mind what we have seen him do almost win Pocono in 2016 and just being someone who is completely fearless on ovals, that guy could be special. I would also say having worked with Greg Ray for a number of years back in the day when he was an IndyCar rookie, I actually see a lot of parallels between Greg and McHale. When we're talking about ovals, there is no one who is more comfortable pushing further into the boundaries, having crazy things happen, sideways sliding, you name it. These two, this Texas-Moscow connection, they're almost the same person in that regard. The ability to pull it back and get to the finish enough times and not hit walls, it's maybe where the two of them struggled. So when you've got the team picking up too much of the tab or enough tab to have a big enough say as to who drives the car, all of a sudden you're no longer driving the car. If you have run into too many things and exhausted the budget that you brought. All right, we are going to wind down here because we are getting to the longest podcast I think we've ever done for the week in IndyCar news, even though we're trying to bring 2 weeks into one. Let's see. Matt Kohler asks, will there ever be push to pass on ovals? I really hope not, Mark. I hope there would never be push to pass on road and street courses because it's a gimmick. And if you're incapable of passing, especially with the new 2018 bodywork that is supposed to make it a little bit easier to do so, if you have to rely on a button to get by somebody, like that's fun to do at home when you're gaming because we're not professional IndyCar drivers. If you can push a button and essentially pass someone, I know a pass has taken place. But in theory, anybody could push that button and make that pass, or you know, for the most part. So that, to me, I've just never been a fan. I understand the reason why it was introduced, because there have been times in IndyCar where passing has been a great challenge due to the technical regulations being off in some area that make it really hard to accomplish. But, yeah, I'm a big fan for getting the technical specs right, so push to pass isn't needed. Let's see. Cindy Kuipers asks, is there a chance in this world that we could go back to the true month of May for the Indy 500 and move the Grand Prix of Indy to the final race of the season? Interesting idea, Cindy. I just don't see it, though, because I think the packaging of it gives IndyCar a very inexpensive race. Well, granted, it's not cheap to turn on IMS for the day. It is essentially a home race for teams, and knowing that it leads right into the 500, it gives them an extra race, and it's just, to me, I think it's too convenient for where it sits to actually get moved elsewhere. Scott Richards asks, was there any truth to the rumor years ago that Dale Earnhardt was going to run the Indy 500? I have no idea. I'll admit that's the first time I've heard that one, so that might be, if I remember, we will ask Robin next week. All right, let me pick here through, and you guys were pretty awesome. You sent just a simple request, hey, this might be a short week, there's not a ton of news, could you send a couple questions? We'd love to answer them. And y'all are crazy enough to send 70 or 80. I don't know how many, but anyways, you guys rock. Let's see. Let's close on this, because this one's important to me, and hopefully you as well. Sam Stedman asks, any chance there will be more than 33 cars for next year's Indy 500 so we can see actual bumping again? Sam, I think we might. I think. If all of these additional teams come in, I've heard that Michael Schenck, our friend Michael Schenck, is looking pretty good for returning to the month of May next year. I mean, we spoke recently and he said things were looking good, but I've heard that things are looking even better. So I think we can put that one in. We had our friend Steph Wilson confirm he's going to be in the fifth Andretti car next year. So, you know, could we see Andretti get up to six cars again? Five, six, seven? I don't know. Should be in pretty good shape there. All right, so we could have Ganassi with, I don't know, three cars maybe. We know that they're going to have at least two full-time, but be a surprise if they didn't expand to try and run three for the month of May. We know that Penske is going to be down to four instead of five. A little bit of shuffling here. So, you know, granted, you look at the Ganassi guys, we're going to move at least two cars over, hopefully, to other entries. Can we be more than 33, Sam? I think so. I think in a really strong world, if we add in the Junkos, we add in the Harding, we add in the Schenk, who knows if the Laziers are going to be back. A couple other, you know, things that could be in the works. How many will Sam Schmidt run? How many will a few others run? Could we be 34, 35? I think that's best case scenario. I would say 34 I'd feel fairly confident about. 35 would be a really, really happy picture. But, again, I don't think we are going to see a big jump by any means. And I think if we're looking at the full season, whereas this year we had 21-ish cars, 22 on occasion, if we're at 20 to 21 to start the year, I think folks should be pretty happy considering the contraction at Ganassi, at Penske, and again, hopefully we can fill in a little bit with a few more at some other teams, whether it's full-time, part-time, not exactly sure, but I think numbers, car count's going to continue to be a little bit of a challenge for IndyCar. And among the many things that we are hoping to improve in the very short term, IndyCar has a new TV partner that they'll hopefully secure and announce. The ratings will go up, sponsors will pay more money, but of the things IndyCar is going to need to take a hard look at, if we're just talking pure numbers, it is, hey, 6, 7, 8 million a year to run a single car, to be competitive, truly competitive, continues to be a number that is hard for folks to hit, very hard for folks to hit. What can we do to get that down to 5? Can we make 4.5 to 5 kind of the place where if you can do that, you know you can be, you're not going to be winning. There's always going to be the Penske's, there's always going to be the Andretti's that are, you know, there's going to be a couple top dog entries everywhere. But what can we do to make someone with 4.5 to 5 at least competitive? Couple podiums a year, a win if all the planets align, but you know, right now you need to add a couple million on top of that to really have a hope of winning, and that's why we're not seeing 26 car grids everywhere. That's why we're not seeing 38 cars show up for the month of May. So if we can get budgets down, and I realize I'm not offering you any solutions right now, I'm just mentioning a general topic, and this is definitely something to write about in the off season here. But if we can get the costs to compete down, at least in line with what sponsors are willing to pay at where the series is at right now in terms of return on investment, then I think we do start to get back to lots of cars and IndyCar looking healthier. All right, we're at about 45 minutes. It's about all I got to offer. Thanks for the hall pass last week. And we are certainly hoping that our friend Mr. Miller, the cantankerous one, is feeling better for next week. But in case he isn't, shoot me some ideas on who I should reach out to have join in as a special guest host while Robin continues to get better. Other than that, I'm Marshall Pruitt. This is A Week in IndyCar.